Welcome to MyPersonalFootballCoach.com's Soccer Player Development Podcast. Discover all the secrets, hints, and tips about soccer player development and soccer coaching from some of the leading figures in world soccer. Here's your host, Saul Isaacson-Hurst.
What's happening, guys? Welcome back to another show. Got another top guest for you this week. It's Steve Gale. Steve, someone I've known for many, many years. Sounds really well known, particularly in Southwest London. He's worked in Fulham and Chelsea's academy. He's also got a very successful coaching business that works all across South London. Also does some one-to-one training. So yeah, great to finally get Steve on the show and talk about his journey. He's got a real interesting journey as well in terms of as a young player growing up and choosing non-league over academy football and grew up in the Roehampton estate, if you don't know. One of the biggest estates in the country. So yeah, very much a street baller, taking that into his coaching career. So really interesting to see how he's adapted that to put that into practice and also played a big role in recruitment at both Fulham and Chelsea. So yeah, another great guy to have on the show. And he's also one of the presenters on the Virtual Academy, the Next Gen Club. If you don't know the My Personal Football Coach Virtual Academy, Next Gen Club is back. Steve's delivering some technical sessions. We've got Chris Robinson, ex-scout at Chelsea, who's now head of recruitment at Southampton, doing monthly how to get scouting tips. We've got physicals. We've got Charlie Quigley, again from Southampton, S&C Co. Southampton, doing monthly physical sessions to get power, quicker, stronger, more agile. Tactical sessions from my good friend and everyone you know, Glenn Hicks as well. And with over 100 other sessions, so you can try it for free. So if you're a coach, you want to learn more about football from some of the best specialists in world football, or you're a parent of a player or you're a player yourself, you want to be trained like a pro wherever you are in the world, check out the My Personal Football Coach app. You can try it out for 3 days, the Virtual Academy, the Next Gen Club, and take your coaching, your playing and all your game to the next level. Without further ado, though, let's get into the show. So welcome back to another MPFC podcast, joined today by a very special guest, Stephen Gale. Steve Gale, how you doing, mate?
I'm good, thank you. So yourself?
Very well, mate. Good to have you on.
Good.
Steve and I, we've known each other for several years now, many years, come across each other in the realms of youth football in Southwest London particularly. Steve, just give us a brief breakdown of your playing and coaching journey up to this point.
Okay, so playing wise, as a young player, just really raw estate player, didn't really play organised football until I was last year at primary school, basically. In a primary schools league in Putney, come off Roehampton Estate. So we then went into Collierswood United, and that was based off of kids from Roehampton Estate, Alton Estate, and Battersea, and that was the start of my grassroots journey. Really, then went into Women and Football Club, played for Fulham, played for Brentford, and then played for England Youth. Went on to play for England Youth. Made my debut at 15 and a half for Kingstonian. So very young debut for me. And come out of the game very young. So, you know, wasn't sort of in and out through injury after that. Come back into the game at 21 and then sort of turned my back on the game after that. As I, if I'm honest, brutally honest, didn't enjoy non-league football.
And tell us about then your coaching,
So coaching journey. So in actual fact, I think honesty is the best policy, and there's a lot of talk about it now. Funny enough, I have quite a few colleagues that are talking about and expressing their views of the football journey and actually parts of their journey they didn't particularly enjoy. And I think that's being brutally honest. I then never watched a game for 2 years, turned my back on football completely. And looked at different opportunities in life, and then eventually reverted back to sport. Just really had a passion for developing technique. When I went back to watching the game again, my most frustrating thing for me was looking at the technical aspect of the game, and really wanting to break it down for children. I was looking out the window on my old council estate in my mum's block and thinking there's no kids on the street no more, no one playing, you know, and it broke my heart really, because outside that block there'd always be boys on the street playing football. And we're talking before cages, you know. So I then through old colleagues, got involved with Fulham Football Club, went through my coaching qualifications, and then really started to develop a passion for developing technique. Young technical players in particular, I found that
if I laid the cables early enough, then they would be in place for the future. I found that the older I was working with players, I found it very difficult for them to acquire that technique to go into the game. And my younger pre-academy players were my passion at the time, really.
So then just briefly go through this. So you started at Fulham, just quickly briefly, what did you do at Fulham? Then where did you go after that? And so we'll Fulham, go a bit so deeper after that.
I started off really as a casual coach. And then, you know, I was sort of fast-tracked to work within the scouting network and an academy. I then become pre-academy coordinator. We're talking sort of 25 years ago now, so... or 20 years ago, rather, we're talking players like Harvey Elliott, Harvey Vowell, the Cessinons that come through the club at the time. So I then worked for Fulham for two years as an academy coach. I then stayed within the club for seven seasons as a scout and recruitment and pre-academy coordinator. And then moved on to Chelsea Football Club a year later.
Okay, great. So let's go back in there because we've had this conversation before and you've got quite an interesting, let's talk about your football career because, I mean, you've got quite an interesting story about, you know, why you didn't go into, why you went into non-league early. Talk a little bit about that, why you chose the non-league route rather than the academy route or the pro club route.
Yeah. Oh. I don't know. I sort of say I'm a little bit of a football rebel, really. I had a lot of mates that they went into the scholarship program a couple of years older than me. I always played with older kids, basically, from a young age, like under 12, under 13. Always played like with under 15s, under 16s on the estate. And what I noticed is there were some really sad stories. Boys had gone into the old YTS program. And they come out the system and have breakdowns, you know, turn their back on the game, never kicked a ball again, you know. So really, really quite sad stories. And I remember being part of that, you know, remember being very anxious at 15, thinking, am I going to get a YTS? Am I not? Blah, blah, blah. Then I got the opportunity to go down Kingstonians. At the time, they had a really good youth team, doing very, very well. I had a couple of mates who were a little bit older that had gone down there that were part of Chelsea Schoolboys, Fulham, one at Millwall as well, and decided to go down. And they offered me straight away. So I'd done 16s, 18s, and then fast-tracked to the first team straight away. So sort of training with the first team and just decided in the end, it's pointless going up and down the country on trial for a scholarship program. I can play youth team football. I can play first team football, train with the first team and go through that pathway. A lot of my mates weren't, you know, once they were in the scholarship program anyway, were probably playing one game a week. I was probably getting two or three games a week. So straight away playing against men, I thought was a big advantage, you know.
And then tell us why then you fell out of love with the game. That's not too forced.
Well, I mean, I was put in the first team at a young age. Bearing in mind, you know, 5'8", probably 10.5 stone at the time, getting smashed about by centre halves, playing the number 10 role back then in non-league football was not easy. Believe me, you know, if you think Xavi moves his head like that enough, you know, like 500 times a game or whatever, I was doing it maybe 1,000 times because your ball's in the air.
You're doing this to stay alive, don't you?
That's the difference, mate. Exactly. Yeah. So. It was all in the air, really. We were actually, I would say, looking back on it, quite a technical side. We had some very good footballers at K's at the time. So it was just establishing yourself in the side as a young player. And I was very unfortunate. I broke my fifth metatarsal bone. I went in to break that a number of times. It was then a stress fracture. So then I sort of come out of the game. But then taking time out to go back into the game, I realised that I didn't actually enjoy it. You know, the ball was never to feet. If I dropped short to receive, no one was willing to give me the ball. It'd always be hit long. And you walked away from the game thinking, how much have I actually spent on the ball? How many times have I received the ball in a game? Are players seeing the pictures to give me the ball in the first place? No, they're not. I didn't feel the coaching was good enough, if I'm honest, either. So I found it very frustrating. I had mates that loved non-league football, absolutely loved it.
And I have full respect for non-league players. They have to work very, very hard, you know, juggling a job, committing to training, committing to nutrition as well, and playing in the leagues where there's a lot of travelling, but you're not getting a lot of financial reward for it. I have huge respect for non-league footballers, but it just wasn't for me. I didn't enjoy the style of football.
And then, I mean, listen to your story, I know you as well. You're very much a street footballer, like you say, grew up in Roehampton Estate, one of the estates in the country. So tell us about that then, in terms of how did that mould your coaching methodology and, you know, and the stuff, your delivery. You talked about you wanted to play technical players, but I'm interested in how do you transition that into on the pitch, into in terms of your planning and your delivery. What does that look like in your first, think back to your first like academy sessions, if you like.
Yeah, so my coaching philosophy when I done my UEFA B license has never changed. It's never changed, really. I mean, I've tweaked it slightly, but it's never changed. It's always been to create and help develop technical players and allow them expression on the pitch with creativity. What I have found and seen over the years is the game is certainly becoming a lot more robotic. In terms of possession play. So the academy system went a little bit possession mad. For me, it was after Spain won the World Cup, and a lot of sort of tiki-taka style of play. For me, growing up as a kid, it was always about beating a player in a 1v1. We had a series of different games that we used to play that you know, enabled technique to flourish, for instance, you know. I remember on my particular road getting a 1-2 off a bus, you know. It was, listen, it weren't the thing to do, but we done it, you know. We don't think, you used to be able to hop on and off of buses, but we'd go, can we hit the ball as it's moving down the road? Can we strike it, get it out of our feet and hit the bus and get a 1-2? You look back on it and it was hilarious, you know. But also like lofted passes and stuff like that. We'd be doing it over cars, getting a 1-touch out of the feet, striking against the wall. But you'd be doing it for hours. So when you think about actual football minutes per day, my route to school was coming out of my block, coming down the stairs, hang dropping into my school, and there'd be 20 boys in the playground. You know, that was before school, primary school. So 8 till 9, we were on the ball. Break time, we were on the ball. Lunchtime, we were on the ball. We left school, we were back on the ball again. You'd go in for dinner, you'd have your dinner, you come back out, you're back on the ball. So you're 5 hours straight away in per day.
It is. So tell us about then your first experiences going into academy football in Fulham in coaching. What did that look like in terms? Tell us about your initial. I mean, going from, you know, a street player, played men's football into that organized academy environment. What are some of the challenges there? The initial experiences you had when you moved in there as you first went in there as a coach.
I struggled. There was a lot of structure. It felt like the education system for me, which. You know, I didn't have a great education at primary school on a council estate in the middle of London. It was more like a youth club, if I'm honest. So secondary school, obviously a lot more structure, a lot more stability for me. But being the person I was in terms of self-discipline, really calmed down at secondary school, become a lot more structured myself, and football certainly helped with that. But going into the academy system, I found that at the time, there was a lot of academic people, you know, and I come from a background of pure football, really. Players that didn't necessarily have a good academic background, but played the game because they were certainly talented at sport. When I went into the academy system, there was initially a lot of academic people. So I realised, listen, I'm going to have to do a lot of research. I'm going to have to study. But it's quite interesting because, you know, you fast forward the clock 25 years later, my methodology hasn't really changed, if I'm honest. So, but it's great listening to people and it's great working with people. But really, really, football's a simple game for me. It's a simple game and it shouldn't be overcomplicated.
Tell us about those. What are those first sorts of sessions you put on? Give us a typical session that you put on there at Fulham.
Always with a ball, mate. Like for me, in pre-academy, what I did find at the time is that kids weren't moving properly. So first of all, we would initially get them on the ball and it would be like a whole session. I would then get them off the ball and lay the cables for movement. So it would be a case of you know, moving forwards, backwards, doing some basic plyometric skills like hopping, hopscotch, skipping, etc., tag games, even rolling and standing up fast, you know, things that kids would have done with outdoor play on the street. Then getting them back on the ball and honing in on the basics, the very basics of technique. So one-to-one ball mastery. I found that when I'd done the Cova Culture coaching courses years ago, they were, for me, more beneficial from some of the stuff that I'd learned via the FA. I didn't understand why on a football level two, there was no real ball mastery on that particular course. So I couldn't get my head around it. And it was a 6v6. Great, the games are teaching sometimes, but you know, individual ball mastery is very important. So we spent a lot of time on one-to-one ball mastery, probably 45 minutes to an hour purely on ball mastery. And then in the hour and a half, in the half an hour, we'd always give him the game. Always give him the game. Because, you know, initially I found that as a child, that's what I wanted. I wanted to play the game.
And tell us about then your pre-academy coordinator at Fulham, a big club, but surrounded of, you know, you got your noisy neighbours next door, the Giants of Chelsea next door, dominating the whole of maybe England with their recruitment, got Tottenham, Arsenal. What was that like in terms of what were the challenges in terms of doing that and trying to bring the players through the door at Fulham?
Listen, at the time, I considered us to be the best. We were the best pre-academy in London in terms of the people that we had. Very impressionable people. Very personable with parents as well. We didn't tolerate football projects as such. So any parents that we felt that were slightly mad, you know, we'd send them one way. Go to Chelsea, go to Arsenal. Okay. But we don't tolerate that here. We want respect for our coaching staff. You don't talk out. You don't shout out when sessions are going on. When you step foot onto the pitch, you give us ownership to your child and let us develop them. We don't want to hear comments, especially within training sessions at games. And, you know, I think we created full respect at time for the coaches. You know, we're talking about people like ex-players, ex-Fulham captains, Sean Davis, Rufus Brevitt, Grant Walgar, who's currently at Chelsea, Stuart Holloway at the time. We had a very good goalkeeping coach, Jeff Warren, that's now with Fulham's first team. Ali Melu, who's now the 18s coach at Fulham. Andrew Watt, who is now academy manager. They were all under the hub of the pre-academy at the time. So listen, top people, very good coaches and very impressionable with young kids. John O'Brien, in terms of recruitment, one of the best guys I've worked for in London. Tom O'Connell, some really good scouts. Malcolm Malias, who we know is certainly a scouting legend. And Hugh Jennings gave us the ownership at the time to do it. Listen, I have full respect for Chelsea and Arsenal. They're very good at what they were doing. But the way we used to get access to the players was that if you come into our programme, you give us a chance, forget the badge, look at the development, look at what we're doing, and you will choose us over the other two clubs.
Very interesting. Tell us about then, is what sort of players were you looking for? I mean, Fulham's always has been one of the best academies in London for a long time. Always, you know, punching above the weight, could say, in terms of size of the club. Massively. Yeah. So tell us what sort of things are you looking for when you're trying to get players when you're looking at the potential for the eights?
Well, it's really interesting. At the time, a lot of my recruitment was based in Brixton, in South London, where my business is based. And we were looking at all types of children. Really interesting. So obviously I created a primary schools software at the time for the primary PE curriculum. And a lot of that from 5 to 7 years of age is based around movement, holistic movement, and the technical aspect of the whole PE curriculum. And from that, we would identify the gifted and able children. And from that, whether they kicked a ball or not, we would then put them children into our pre-academy program at Fulham. At the time, we had three centres in South London. We had West Norwood, we had the Battersea Youth Centre, and then we had the main hub, which was Fulham's training ground. And we would have like literally 8 to 12 kids that had been talent identified by the team sent in, and we would work with them children for over 2 years and incorporate them into a games program on a Saturday morning. And listen, it really did work. We you know, if I give you an example of a player that technically never stood out in a session, but long term, if you're profiling a player, you go, look, this kid has got a profile to be a top centre half. When I look at pre-academy now, what we see is we see a lot of athletic children. They can all move really well. They're very, very good with the ball. But how many of them long term are going to be a centre half? How? That's why we see so many centre halves failing now, because they cannot defend. They cannot win the ball. We had boys at 7, 8 years of age that could win the ball back properly, you know. And then long term, you know, yes, we would give them opportunities in central midfield, but equally, we knew in our heart of all hearts they'd end up at centre half, some of these kids. So Charlie Robinson now is in the 21s at Fulham. Unfortunately, he's had some bad injuries, but top player. At 6, 7 years of age, he wouldn't mind me saying this, he's probably one of our technically worst boys at the time. But you know what? Attitude and desire, number one. Number one. So for us, it was looking at the mentality of the child as well, and making sure that when they come into our court, they really, really enjoy the game. They love the game. They want to be there. My biggest concern was the parents that were over-enthusiastic bringing their kids into our program. But actually, the child, did they really want to be there? Probably not. It's because their dad or mum wanted them there. I was always cautious of that. And I would then revisit them kids a couple of years later when they were mentally ready.
And then talk about then you make the short trip across southwest London to Cobham. Tell us about that in terms of going to work with Chelsea. How did that come about?
Yeah.
Tell us about the compare and contrast with Fulham for us.
Yeah, I think we all get that 7-year itch. I sort of done 7 years at Fulham, really. And I thought, do you know what? I need a new challenge. And listen, at the time, I got to a point where I was either going to go in as an academy coach, maybe with the older children, or just stick to recruitment. And my business decision at the time was to concentrate purely on SG Sports and the soccer school, where we were very busy across London. I then made the... I took a year out of the game just to have a good think about what I really wanted to do. So I then sat down with Darren Grace and said, look, I'd like to take a scouting role, really. And I was really interested to see how Chelsea recruit and what they'd done differently and what investment they had in terms of supporting development centres across London and the skills and games programme that made their academy one of the best in Europe, if not the world.
So go on then, tell us a little bit about it. Anything you can share without obviously, you know, giving away the crown jewels? Just in terms of like, I mean, don't give, you know, all the secrets. Just give us in terms of the, because I noticed after I worked there, the vastness in terms of the scouting network. And you talked about Fulham having three centres, having centres of Chelsea. I've given some because people may not understand the sheer volume of, you know, of staff and logistics they have involved in that academy programme.
Well, I went in there and within a month, I was like, in the back of my mind thinking, well, Fulham are like the SAS of the academy world. We'd have a small team, we'd go in and raid and we'd get the best players. That's how I felt a month into Chelsea. I thought, it's like the American army, you know, they can supply everything. They've got the resources, they've got the coaches, they've got the scouts, they've got the finances that go with it. It was mind blowing, really. The amount of jackets and you know, manpower they had at the club, female staff, resources, they would throw everything at you, to be fair. So it, you know, going in there was really, really enjoyable. I found it tough as a Fulham person, found it really tough and wearing a blue jacket, for instance. But obviously taking the Fulham hat off, I was in there to learn. And listen, working with some top people, you know, Ray Renbridge, legendary scout, Chris Robinson, very supportive. Chris come out of a really good program at the time, which I was a big fan of, with the IDP, bringing in children and assessing them over a 6-week period before making a decision on whether they come in for full academy trial. I think that was a good process. My only concern at the time was there was too many decision makers in that process.
Hi guys, hope you're enjoying the show. Just a quick one to tell you about the Next Gen Club Virtual Academy. We have a new presenter this month. It's Dr. Tom Bates. He's delivering psychology stroke mindset sessions to the online students at the Virtual Academy. Tom's got a very long, successful career, worked at first team at Villa and Brentford, also many academies as well, and Team GB. So delivering mindset psychology sessions. Also this month, Charlie Quigley, S&C coach at Southampton, Chris Robinson on tips how to get scouted, and our very own Glenn Hicks, a tactical sessions. You can now try the Next Gen Club Virtual Academy for free. So go to the My Personal Football Coach app, courses section, and try it out. There's over 100 other challenges there. So if you're a player or you're a parent of a player, aspiring pro, or someone who wants to get better, or you're a coach and you want to upskill yourself, this is not to be missed, and you can try it out for free. Now let's get back to the show.
In terms of the vastness, how do they organise it? You talked about Fulham having three centres. Talk about how many centres Chelsea have got around London.
Chelsea's resources are unreal. So they had development centres in South London, in West London, in North London, in East London. So contacts and clusters and hubs of grassroots clubs in each community. Obviously, the financial aspect is a massive aspect. If you've got a budget that can suffocate all the surrounding clubs, then obviously you're going to be getting access to the best kids within them areas. They then come into the IDP or the pre-academy at Chelsea. And what I will say for any parent, and let's think about parents that are maybe quite, if you're a family that is slightly underprivileged, and you go into a club like Chelsea Football Club, and you are presented with the training ground, the resources that they have, the coaching staff, it's very, very difficult to then say no to that. It's really, really tough. So I would say in terms of recruitment, they have been the best I've seen in terms of recruitment.
Yeah, I mean, they got even out of London, right? They're doing Essex, doing Sussex, whatever, they down to Portsmouth. But yeah, unbelievable. Yeah. What sort of players are they looking for? Did you think there was a different emphasis on the profile players are looking to get into the club rather than you had at Fulham?
I left the club not knowing what they're looking for, if I'm totally honest, and that was one of my reasons for leaving. So there was never a this is the type of player that we're looking for. I found that the profiling from a young age determined who was going to stay at the academy for a long period of time. So actually, some of the players that Chelsea recruited through me were players that, in my opinion, were quite overlooked by the heads of recruitment. And it was a real battle and a real struggle to get them boys across the line. You know, I really, really had to fight their corner just to say, look, we need a couple of dots in there. We need boys that can scan, see pictures. Long-term players, not just young, quick athletes that can physically out-muscle other children at a young age and out-sprint. You know, we need to be looking at all different types of human beings. But I found that the pre-academy at the time was just being suffocated by young, able, early maturation athletes, if I'm honest.
Interesting. And it says, tell us about then also, you talk about your company in a minute, but you also work once individually with players, some top players. Tell us about your individual work. Tell us about how do you approach that and compare to comparison to your group work?
Yeah, so with the one-to-one players, I've worked with a number of different pros. To name a few would be Charles Sago Jr., currently at Arsenal, Aggie Beaver-Jones, currently England and Chelsea centre-forward, Finn Mooney, who's just come out of La Liga, he's back in England now, and then players sort of spontaneously that will drop in throughout pre-season. So, you know, during the summer, there was Arthur Okwonkwo, goalkeeper, interestingly enough, at Wrexham, and his brother, Brian. And then, you know, various boys that have come out of the system and that want to get back into the system as pro. So, yeah, them sessions are tailored to the player, really, but position specific. So whether it's I need to work on their technique in terms of crossing, finishing in different types of ways as a striker, heading in particular. I think he's a growing weakness in academy football in general. So when you're looking at 16s and 18s, anticipation in the box to finish. Is there enough sessions that coaches are putting on for them children to finish? Obviously, now we know the rule at the younger age groups is heading's been taken out of the game. So I find it's really, I found this when I worked in the US actually, that when I was working with youth players, they just couldn't finish with a head. And it was the fact that the heading had been taken out of the game. So when I'm working with young pros now on that, it's, you know, in and around a 6-yard box, losing your defender for space and anticipating when that ball's being whipped in, how we finish in different ways. Back to goal finishing is a big one as well.
Yeah. And so tell us about then now, so you're back involved with academy football now, and you're back at Fulham working in recruitment, is that right? Is he still?
Yeah, recruitment, yeah. Not coaching. Listen, with my business doing what I'm doing, I can't commit to the role of academy coach. I think that academy coaching now, there's huge demands on it. There's a lot of paperwork. So it almost becomes a full-time job, if you like. So I can't commit to that. But in terms of recruitment, I still really enjoy that, to be fair. I love identifying, young top talent. My most recent one was Bashir Labega that went in last season in February. He went in as an under 15. He played for me for Dover House Lions Football Club, based in Putney, Roehampton. And I put him on trial. Funny enough, he'd been into Chelsea's IOP and he went through Chris's programme twice. And it was a no from Chelsea, but it was a yes from me. And I think we have to be honest about that as scouts. Like, I'm a scout because I believe in my judgment in terms of assessment of a young player. And they all have the P above their head for me. They're all potential. No one's the finished article, even at scholarship. No one's the finished article, you know. So for me, Bashir Labega as a 15 going in at Chelsea, for me, he was a yes. For the recruitment team, he was a no. He went into Fulham and he nailed his trial. So played 3 games, performed, scored goals, but played as a 9. And he played central midfield for me. But at 8, they said, Gailey, do you think he can play as a 9? We need a 9. Yes, put him up there. What I used to do was Bash would move him further down the pitch as a 9 in the second half, just so I could, you know, extend his learning. But back to goal, he's very good at receiving, turning and running at people and finishing. So he went in there, nailed his trial, got offered, then went 16s, then started playing 18s within the space of 6 months. He was playing under 18s football at Fulham. Then he's now been offered a scholarship. He's doing very, very well and on the radar for England.
Tell us about then, you've also been one of the presenters on the My Personal Football Coach, the Virtual Academy, the Next Gen Club. You've delivered a couple of really interesting presentations. Tell us about how important it is for players, do you think, to carry on learning and working away from the game to refine their technique and all those other areas of their game?
Yeah, I loved it, Sol. And listen, I really appreciate you inviting me on. I've always been an admirer from afar for what you do. And listen, it's a tough job what you do with social media and stuff like that. I often think, you know, the demands of that on you sort of emotionally throughout the day must be very demanding to stay on top of it all. And, you know, big admiration. So well done for that, mate. It must be very, very tough. So it was great to come on, mate. And I just literally delivered a couple of sort of basic techniques really for opening up the game and, you know, changing the picture in the game from a central midfield perspective. Couple of moves there, but I think it's massive, especially in today's game. We spoke about creativity and the fact that someone like Cole Palmer, who's burst on the scene, is like a breath of fresh air to me and you. Lovely to watch. If I'm a football purist and a fan paying to go in a stadium, I'm paying to go and watch Cole Palmer.
Cole Palmer is like your archetypal sort of street footballer, isn't he? Like the spontaneity, the technical brilliance, the bravado. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? It's there, isn't it?
It's all there, yeah. And I love the fact that when he receives the ball, he's ultra cocky. He knows exactly what he's going to do. Whether he's back to the goal and he's running away from the goal and he commits the foul in the area, he turns around, he gives his players that look as if to say, standard, I know what I'm doing. Puts the ball down for the penalty, slots. You know, he's incredible to watch. He's a breath of fresh air for the Premier League, I think.
Yeah. So just for everyone else, just if you want to check out the Next Gen Club, the Virtual Academy, you can try it for free for 3 days on the My Personal Football Coach app. Give the details and the info there. But just lastly, then, Steve, what advice would you give to a young coach or someone who gets involved in recruitment who's just starting up and wants to have a career in a game like yourself? I mean, just, and then, yeah, go ask that first, and I've got one more at the end there.
Yeah, I'll start with recruitment. I'd say with recruitment, look at all children, or look at all human beings. In London, we're blessed with so many different types of human beings. And I think, yes, movement is very, very important. But listen, what we're losing is a lot of creativity in the game. And we are, listen, this is the most important thing, the brain pictures, you know, when players receive the ball, when they, you know, they're receiving on the back foot or on a half turn. I'm looking for them types of players, as well as the dribblers and runners. And also, don't have one eye on a goalkeeper. If you've got a playmaker at the back and someone who can defend really, really well, stick the kid in goal every now and then. Obviously, look at the height of the parents, by all means, but put the boy in goal. Have a look at, or she, put them in goal. Have a look at their hand-eye coordination. You may well have a keeper on your hands as well as a centre-half. So look at all different types of aspects of the game. It's very, very important in terms of recruitment. In terms of coaching and developing, I think, you know, doing what Saul does, doing what I do, is spend as much time with the ball as possible on different techniques and variation in technique, whether that is one-to-one ball mastery, whether it's moves, whether it's changes of direction, whether it's receiving, whether it's getting the basics right, the weight of the pass right, the difference in swerve passing and opening up and changing the play. I'm seeing a real lack of swerve passing out there as well. I'm seeing clips. But because there's so much short passing in academy football and dribbling, I don't see them clever passes anywhere. Where are the Perlos? Where are the clever players that can put back the bin on the ball? You know, where are they? They're not coming through the system. So we need to be developing that type of player. Don't be ashamed of, if you're in a call and you're doing a standard practice where it's receiving, getting your head up and clipping that ball with a little bit of backspin for the number nine, do it. Because that's what that player may need to work on.
And then tell us finally about, you've got a very successful sports business, coaching business, SG Sports Coaching. Is that right? Is that SG Sports?
That's right, yes, yes.
And so just tell us about that, because obviously that's another thing, you know, you obviously chose it, where you're very successful, one of, you know, strongest probably in your area and even that whole part of London. Tell us a bit of how difficult that's been, and top tips for people who want to try and get a football business together.
Very, very tough. Very, very tough. I think, listen, we were flying pre-COVID, doing really, really well. And listen, I'll tell you what, COVID come along and it changed everything. It knocked the wind out of us as a company. It was tough. You know, I dipped into the online world. So listen, that's why I have huge admiration for what you've done with your podcast. It's so challenging to keep on top of it constant and do your video stuff. So listen, you've done so well with that. For me, I found that a real challenge and a real frustration. You know, we come through the other side, we maintain contracts. I think for me, it was our network in London, doing what we do in schools, getting the right coaches that are impressionable with the children, that have a good personality and a good energy about them. I think if you're going to become a coach, you have to have good energy levels. Really, really important. There's lots of people that have top qualifications, but they don't have the energy that goes with it. So you have to have a real passion, you know, and believe in what you're doing, basically. Our for us at SG Sports is about giving children that holistic curriculum where they're not only working on, we find there's a lot of sports companies out there that just solely work on football. As a company, if anything, we know football takes care of itself across South London, so we concentrate on all the other sports. I think gymnastics would be my best thing to deliver in schools, because I think children really get to work with their body holistically, working on their balance, mobility, you know, small points of the body, large patches of the body. And there's a sense of calmness about it. Whereas if we go invasion games and we work outside, we're working on things like tag rugby and basketball, which is a new sport for London, really. Basketball, You know, kids play it so well in London now, and you see it in the cages in South London. Whereas when I was a kid, you know, basketball, no one played basketball in London when I was a kid. It was just total football on the streets. So basketball is a really, really good game for upper body coordination, and a good way for footballers to try something different with the same sort of movement patterns.
Steve, thanks, mate. It's been top. Appreciate your time.
Thanks a lot, Sol. Enjoyed it. Cheers, mate. Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in to the MyPersonalFootballCoach.com Soccer Player Development Podcast. MyPersonalFootballCoach.com's Dynamic Ball Mastery Program is the world's leading online individual technical training program, proven and developed at the highest level in the English Premier League. Sign up now to train like the pros and take your game to the next level. Master the ball, master the game.